we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core. Not welcome back. Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Greener. Rick Greener, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. We're going to hit a couple of topics today. First, just a good news item to throw out there, and then I want to spend some significant time today on a topic that came up. I think it was Tuesday. It might have been last Thursday, and I'll get to that one in just a second. But first, some good news. I don't know if anybody noticed this. This is maybe something that people that aren't in the media might not pay a whole lot of attention to. But if you've ever noticed the White House briefings, if you've ever watched a White House briefing, or you've watched a commentary on some press conference that the president has, or maybe you saw the clown show for the last few years with the Biden administration, maybe you've watch some of the new press conferences with this Caroline Leavitt that's just incredibly brilliant. And she's like in her late 20s or something. I mean, young gal, and she's just so good. Anyway, I don't know if you've ever wondered, like, how do you get in the room, right? Like, how do you get a seat at the table for being the part of the press that covers the president of the United States, that gets to actually ask questions of the press secretary or when the president comes in there? Or even when you've seen, once in a while you see these sort of really candid clips on Air Force One, where the president comes back there and talks to the press pool, and they get to ask a few questions just off the cuff, or even in the White House when the president's sitting there at the Resolute desk and there's just a handful of people. I don't know, you can't always tell from the camera angles, but it looks like, 15, 20 maybe, members of the press that are in there. Well, this is the White House press pool that, I don't know how long they've been doing it, but the White House Correspondents Association has been the one to choose who gets to be there. Now just think for a second of all of the press outlets that would like to ask the president questions. So it's not just, in the olden days, in the, 60s, 70s, when you had three networks in the country, not counting PBS, and so you had somebody from each of those three, and then your major newspapers, New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, and everybody else, just had to get their news from, and the AP, of course, from the Associated Press or from whatever these people in the press pool happen to ask or happen to cover. Well, what does that create? That creates a monopoly on the news. It creates the ability to filter what's coming out of the White House so that the legacy media, the mainstream leftist media, essentially controls the narrative. So no matter what the president says, no matter what the White House is actually doing, this small cadre, this little elitist aristocracy of the media gets to control what the American people actually hear. That's the way it's been in the past. And that's how they were able to protect Joe Biden and the ineptitude and the lack of mental faculties and the fact that the 25th Amendment should have been invoked 6 months into his presidency. That's how they were able to cover for him for 4 years. The Weekend at Bernie's routine happened because the press was the ones propping up the corpse. They were the ones covering for someone who should not have been the president of the United States. And they were able to do that because they controlled who was in the room. They made it very difficult for there to ever be a tough question. Now, of course, President Biden didn't even hold press conferences for the last, year of his presidency, didn't hold cabinet meetings. They hid him away. But if you're controlling the questions going to the White House press secretary as well, then you're able to pull this off. You're able to hide this from the American people. So, we would see once in a while, Peter Ducey would get a chance to ask a question. So he was the guy from Fox that, would absolutely, just befuddle the White House press secretary with a basic question, but he was willing to ask that basic question. And when he asked it, she couldn't answer it. And so you'd see a viral video of that. And nobody else in the press pool would cover that. But that has been a monopoly for too long. And like everything else that's happening right now, the Trump administration is saying, we're not playing the game anymore. We're not going to just do business as usual. And I don't think there's any question. I don't see how anyone could argue against the fact. This is just a fact. This is the most transparent White House administration of my lifetime and maybe in American history. Because even if you had presidents before that were willing to be transparent, the tools weren't there to report on it, to cover it, to make it available to the American people. This president, this press secretary, this White House administration is essentially broadcasting everything they're doing. They are making everything they're doing available to the public. Now, I'm sure there's some national security things that are happening around the world that they're not telling us about until after it happens, which makes perfect sense. But man, every move they're making, every policy they're putting in place, every person that they're putting in place, they are broadcasting to the world. And so the next step in that is to make available to more press outlets the ability to cover that transparency. And so they have told the White House Correspondents Association, you're done with your monopoly. You will no longer choose who gets a chair in this room. You will no longer choose the narrative for the American people. And they have opened it up. Now they're letting the, you know, legacy media still be there because they're all about transparency. So they're giving everybody a chance. But man, they've opened it up to Newsmax and The Blaze and all of these different outlets. In fact, I'm wondering when they're going to call us and say, hey, American family, who would you like to send? I think they should. Maybe Walker Wildman should be the White House correspondent for American Family Association. I continue to be amazed at the transparency and the boldness. These are huge moves. I mean, this is the reason previous presidents were never willing to do this kind of thing is because they were afraid of making those media outlets angry and then getting bad stories. Donald Trump doesn't care. He's like, you do your bad stories. Do your worst. Throw me in that briar patch. He is absolutely not afraid of these people. Caroline Leavitt's not afraid of these people. Pete Hegseth is not afraid of these people. Tulsi Gabbard's not. The team that he's put in place could care less what the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times or ABC or George Snuffleupagus. Yes, I know I got it wrong, but none of these doesn't care what these legacy media people think. They're going to do their job. They're going to blast it to the American people. Give all of this information to the entire country and let the chips fall where they may. That's the way it ought to be, folks. That should be refreshing to you. You ought to be encouraged by that. You ought to be thankful for that. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful new day for America and for the freedom of the press. Now, there's weeping and gnashing of teeth in the White House Correspondents Association. They are screaming bloody murder. They are whining like a stuck pig right now because their little monopoly is being taken away from them. And so they're all, this is a threat to the very fabric of freedom of the press. Really? Now, it's kind of like saying that Donald Trump's a tyrant because he's giving American people back their freedom, because he's getting the bureaucrats off of their boot off of the neck of the American people. It's kind of like this is the first tyrant in history, the first dictator in history that actually gives, you know, power back to the people instead of taking it away from them. In the same way, somehow he's abridging the freedom of speech by making freedom of the press by actually giving more freedom to the press, to the entire press, instead of just the select chosen press. You know, it's the same as, you know, let anybody vote as long as I get to count the votes. Same thing for the press. You know, let the president say whatever he wants as long as I get to control what the American people hear from the president. No more. No more of that. I think this is why Elon Musk bought Twitter. I think it's not just for the free speech for us to be able to say what we think. It was an outlet to be able to report on what the politicians were saying, what they were doing, being able to get that to the American people. And so Elon buying Twitter, major game changer. Now you even got Jeff Bezos actually changing the atmosphere at the Washington Post. I mean, these are big, big, big victories, folks. This is winning. This is winning the culture. This is getting us back to that place that we wanted to be, getting us back to that place where you have actual freedom of speech, actual freedom of the press, actual freedom to assemble, to petition your government for a redress of grievances, to live out your faith. all of these basic principles that we used to think were guaranteed by the Constitution and the government wouldn't infringe on them, and we saw over the last 4 years complete infringement of so many of those things. Now we're finally to a place where we're starting to restore that, but it takes fundamental change because the mechanism was there for a tyrant to step in. And I don't even know if I can really call Joe Biden the tyrant. It was really his team. I don't think Joe Biden was aware of most of what happened in the last 4 years. But the team that he, that put him in place and then controlled what was happening out of the White House for the last 4 years, they were tyrants. They were petty tyrants, unnamed, amassed tyrants that we never even got to know who they really were. And so the mechanisms were there to allow them to do that by controlling the narrative to the American people, and that mechanism is just being blown up right now. The Trump administration is just rewriting the books, folks. They're resetting the table. You know, I've said for a long time that the amendments to the Constitution that I support and that we're trying to get done, that's what they're about. They're about resetting the table. They're about restoring federalism, restoring the proper jurisdictions of government, restoring checks and balances, putting states back in a position to be able to say no to the federal government. All of those things reset the table. They restore. You have to. You can't just swat at the mosquitoes. You have to drain the swamp, and you have to rebuild. And that's what this is. This is draining the swamp. It's rebuilding how the press works. So it's just another victory. I can't keep up. I keep pinching myself. I keep wondering, am I going to get tired of winning? I know Trump promised us that we get tired of winning. I don't think that one's ever going to happen. I love winning. And this is winning. This is winning, not just for us, but for our kids and our grandkids. It's restructuring this thing for the future. Now, granted, 4 years from now, different president totally changes this if they want. And so this is one of those mechanisms that really does depend on who's actually occupying the White House. The constitutional amendments that I support and that we need to get done actually restructure so that a president cannot easily change those things, that we don't have to worry about this thing swinging back and forth every 4 years or 8 years. So these fundamental changes, the president's doing all of them that he can, and the administration is going to do all that they can to make those fundamental changes to restore liberty, to rebuild liberty in this country. But if we want it to last more than one term, if we want more than just four golden years, if we want four golden generations, then we have to dig deep and make these changes in the Constitution. We have to make these changes in our local communities, in our states. It's got to be much more than an executive order or a White House press decision, White House press office decision. It's got to be beyond that. So we've got to dig a lot deeper. We've got to do a lot more work to make this thing happen. And so that's when we come back from the break here in a second, that's what we'll be talking about, is one of those fundamental changes that we got to dig deep in our local communities, in our states. It's one of those things that there's actually controversy within our movement. So there are conservatives on both sides of this issue. There are people in the faith community, that are on both sides of this issue. And so I want to walk through this issue for the rest of the program today in our second and third segments, and be glad to take your calls, 888-589-8840. There's probably some of you that are going to disagree with me. I know there's some of you that are going to disagree with me on this issue. That was kind of what sparked this the other day. We had a caller that disagreed with me on this, and I want to talk about it a little bit more. It's also an issue that's at the forefront in my home state of Texas. It's an issue that's being debated right now in our legislature, as it is in other legislatures across the country. But it's the biggest issue in the Texas legislature, and it is the issue for which I ran for the state house in 1998. This was my number one issue. I'm not going to tell you what it is till we come back. You may have already guessed. You may be ahead of me. You may listen to the program enough that you already know exactly the issue I'm talking about. But it affects you. It affects everyone in this country. This is one of those that if we win on this issue, we win for generations. This one's big, folks. We'll talk about the pros and cons of it. We'll explain what it is and give you a chance to comment on it as well. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. 888-589-8840. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. We'll be right back on At the Core with Walker Wobbin and Rick Green.
Have you heard of the Freedom Trail in Boston? Well, we're going to see it in October. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. That's our new trip that we've got planned for 2025 is Boston and the surrounding area and all the history there. Again, that's in October. We're also going to Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. We're doing that in June and September. And then back-to-back with that is a visit to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. And along with us on all these tours will be Stephen McDowell, the president of the Providence Foundation, a very influential and well-known historian, Stephen McDowell. So for information on any of these trips that I've just mentioned, go to the website wildmangroup.com, WILDMON.com. And we'd love for you to come with us.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me today. And now we'll get into that hot topic. And yes, if you guessed school choice, you are right. That is the topic that we're going to cover. That is the topic that I ran for the legislature to try to get done. Back in 1998, man, I remember sitting down with the governor, at the time, George W. Bush. And here I was, this young 27-year-old, a little bit arrogant, maybe. I don't know. Can you imagine? A little bit cocky. Yeah, and but, you know, I was on a mission. And I said, Governor, I'm here to get rid of property taxes and get school choice. He smiled and he said, it's good to have goals, son. Anyway, so this has been a long time issue for me. I am a student of Milton Friedman. Okay, so I call him Uncle Milt. I think he's the greatest economist of the last century. And so a lot of what I'm going to share with you right now, I learned from him, but also from Ronald Reagan and of course, most importantly, from the Bible. And biblical principles drive everything, every position that I have. And if I have a position that's contrary to biblical principles, then I want to change. And so I'm always open to civil discourse and discussion. I always approach any topic with the attitude that if I'm wrong, I want to know. I want to be corrected. I want to get better. I want civil discourse. I want iron sharpening iron. So I always welcome opposition to tell me why what I'm proposing is not a good idea. So let's start this discussion with some just understanding of basic principles. Okay, I want to lay out on the table the guiding principles behind what I'm about, you know, behind the position. So if you're ever going to push a policy that you want to be done by your state legislature, local, whatever it is, then it should be based on certain principles. So here's my paradigm, if you will, my perspective, my worldview. There's four things that I want to put on the table before we even go through school choice. Number one, every decision, every question, every policy discussion is going to answer the question, who decides? And so in this particular area of education, the principle upon which I build my position is that parents should decide. That's a basic fundamental worldview idea. Parents are the ones that are given the responsibility, the jurisdiction of the upbringing of the child. And therefore, the parents should make the decision about that child's education, where to be educated, what that education should look like, whether or not to take funding from government or from taxpayers to help with that education. All of those decisions should be made by the parents, not the bureaucrats, not the politicians, not the quote-unquote experts, which is what has driven the government control of education, is the idea that somehow the experts know better than the parents. That's a fundamental disagreement I have with anyone who opposes school choice, who thinks that only the bureaucrats should decide and that they know better. I disagree. So I fundamentally, my position on this issue is driven by the principle that parents should decide. That means not only should not the bureaucrats or the politicians decide or the experts, but other parents should not decide. My neighbor should not decide how I educate my child and whether or not I take state funding from my child. I should not decide for them. They should get to make that decision. So fellow homeschoolers out there, one of my fundamental principles on this is that homeschoolers should not decide for other homeschoolers where they get the money for how they educate their child. You should let that parent make that decision. You make it for your kid, and you let the other parent make it for their kid. Okay, so that's number one principle driving my position on school choice, and why I hope you will join me in supporting school choice, is that the parent should decide, not bureaucrats, politicians, experts, or other parents. Okay, second major principle driving this, competition always improves the product. A monopoly or a bureaucracy controlling a product always ruins it, always makes it worse. So that's a basic principle that any product, any area, if you introduce competition, the product will get better for everyone. If you don't have competition and you have a monopoly or you have a bureaucratic control over either all of that product production or most of that product production, then eventually that monopoly is going to degrade and make the product worse. Because when you have a monopoly, when there's not competition, you have no incentive to improve. You have no incentive to provide a good product. And so eventually you don't do the research, you don't do development, you don't try to get better all the time, you don't ask the right questions, and so your product eventually gets worse. Okay, so number one, who decides? The parent should decide. Number two, competition always improves a product. Whatever level of competition that you can introduce is going to make the product better. Number three, principle that drives this for me is the nature of man is seen in any and all systems. So there is always going to be corruption. There is always going to be an effort by some people to control other people, to manipulate the system, to get rich off the system. The nature of man has to be taken into account. And Jeremiah 17:9, as always, when it comes to government, is something to remember. The heart is deceitful. Above all, no man can know it. We had to recognize that. The founders knew that. They quoted Jeremiah 17:9 all the time. And so that's why you have checks and balances. That's why you have the ability to root out that corruption by taking your money elsewhere, by shining a light on that corruption. So two things about this third principle, that the nature of man is always seen. Number one, that if you say, I'm against school choice because somehow this corruption is going to take place or people are going to misuse the money or whatever, my response to that is going to be, based on this principle, that you already have corruption in the current system. You're going to have people that try to take advantage of it. And so you have to do the best you can with what you got where you are and recognize the reality of the world around you and of the laws of nature and nature's God, and do the best you can to have checks and balances. And I would argue school choice gives more checks and balances to the system of education. It gives the ultimate check and balance by giving the parent the ability to literally leave a system that is too corrupted, take the money, and go elsewhere and create that competition so that the parents are doing their best to make sure that there's less corruption. And in the same way, if you have a corrupt parent that is abusing the child or abusing the money, this creates more opportunity to make sure that abuse doesn't happen as well. Okay, so fourth principle. So we said, who decides? That's number one. The parent decides, that's better. Number two, competition always improves. So we want as much competition in education as we possibly can get. Number three, the nature of man is always going to be there. So you have to have checks and balances to reduce, limit, mitigate the corruption. You're never going to have the perfect world this side of heaven. Okay, fourth one is that if you're involved in this discussion, just being against something is not enough. If you're going to enter the public policy arena, you can't just be against a proposal. You have to have an alternative. What's your solution? Okay? If you're going to be involved in this debate, tell me what your alternative is. You got to counter what I'm proposing with some other option, not just say, I'm against that because this might happen. Okay, then what's your solution? Our process in a constitutional republic requires that we have good civil discourse in order to find the answer. And that civil discourse means that everybody's got to come to the table with a solution, not just being a critic, not just being against everything, okay? So if you're going to oppose school choice, then tell me what your proposal is to improve education. What is your proposal to help the parents that are stuck in bad schools? What is your proposal to help uplift the entire education system? Okay, number one, who decides? So these are the principles driving my position. Number one, the parent decides. The parent knows best. The parent should be the decision maker, not bureaucrats, not politicians, not the experts, and not other parents. Number two, competition's always going to help. Number three, the nature of man's always going to be present. We're going to have to deal with, and we're going to the corruption of man, we're going to need checks and balances. And number four, make sure if you're against what I'm proposing, that you bring a solution to the table. All right, now let's talk about the subject itself, school choice. What is school choice? For some people, you may hear that term and it may mean different things to different people. So let's first say, okay, why would you have school choice? What is education? We got to back up. What is education even all about? So almost every state constitution in America has a clause with regard to public education that basically says, they're a little bit different, but almost the same thing, that a general diffusion of knowledge is necessary for us to have good citizens and preserve the republic. That's essentially what education's all about. In other words, you need an educated populace that understands the principles of liberty and understands their duty and their role as a citizen in order to keep the republic alive. If you don't have that, if your citizenry no longer understands the principles of liberty, they're going to vote for people. They're either not going to vote at all, and then only the people that are voting are going to control the system, or they're going to vote for people that are not for the principles of liberty and that no longer preserve the republic. So the whole reason for education is so that you have a general diffusion of knowledge, so that you have an educated populace that understands their duty as citizens and keep the republic going. Okay, so that's the whole reason to have education. Now, so that's a great idea, having education for that purpose, but see principle number three. Go back to my principles that I just laid out. What is principle number three? That the nature of man is seen as any and all systems. There's always going to be an attempt to corrupt. So once an education system was created in this country, of course there were people that wanted to corrupt that eventually. And what happened? They took over the education system. Over time, took 150 years for that to happen, but they eventually took over the system. And these people abused the system. So then they started having compulsory education. So now no longer is it just a good idea to offer education and give people the opportunity for education. They started forcing education. Every family, you have to do this. So now you have the government deciding, not the parent, where to send that kid and how that kid's going to get educated. So that was an abuse of the system. And then the Marxist control of the system. Not only are you forcing every kid to go to these schools, but then the Marxists took over the education system and what was actually done in the classroom. And so now instead of getting good citizens, you get bad citizens, meaning they don't know what the principles of liberty are. So now they're voting for communism. They're voting for socialism. They're voting for more control in every other area of life, not just education. So that's what essentially happened to this good idea of having a general diffusion of knowledge so you have good citizens that uphold and preserve the republic. But because of the nature of man, you eventually had laziness on the part of parents, not paying attention to what was being done, laziness on the part of business leaders and ministry leaders, not being a positive influence in that area. And we just turned it over to the quote-unquote experts who happened to be educated in Marxist colleges, and then Marxism takes over in the education system, and so now you actually have citizens who don't know what liberty is. Okay, that's the deck that we've been dealt. That's where we are. That's what has happened to education. So school choice is something to interrupt that system, to bring back competition, to give parents the control once again, and to once again have more students, as many as possible, learning in environments that are actually doing this properly. They're giving a general diffusion of knowledge. They're making good citizens that understand how to preserve liberty. That's what school choice, the goal of school choice. Now, this came from, I mean, competition isn't new. That's a nature of man thing. That's a way that God created this. All kinds of parables, Jesus talking about things that provided for competition. But what happened was when the education monopoly began and you had the Marxists take over the education system, it took a little while for people to realize this was happening. And in 1980, 45 years ago, Milton Friedman proposed the idea of free to choose. And he looked at school choice and these voucher programs that had taken place in some other countries or in some small pockets around the United States. And he said, this is working. The competition being introduced into the market is actually improving education, not only for the kids that take the money and go elsewhere, but for the kids left in those other schools where they had to start getting better because they didn't want the other kids to leave and take the money. And so he observed that and said, we should be doing this all over the place. So that's kind of how the school choice movement started. You already had private schools growing. I mean, before that even happened in 1980, I was going to a small private school in Little Rock, Arkansas. And we were watching churches begin to do, start their own private schools. And the homeschool movement started growing and expanding because the public schools were so bad. And they were getting so bad, parents were looking for other choices. Even if they didn't have the money to do it, they were doing whatever it took to get their kids into another option. My family couldn't afford to do this. We ended up actually having people in our church that were actually helping us to do this. So anyway, all of that to say, the competition side of this really started to become a movement because of Milton Friedman's television program, Free to Choose, and then a book, Free to Choose, that came out of that. Okay, so that is what school choice is. School choice is empowering the parent to take the tax dollars that are being spent on their child and choose which building the child is learning in. It puts the parent in control of where the education should take place, what kind of education the kids should get, and the parent can say yes or no to that. So the parent can participate or not participate. There's no school choice program in the country that I know of, and again, I'm open to being corrected on this, that requires a parent to participate in the school choice program. And I think that has to be a requirement of any school choice program that passes. And so why would anybody be against this? The objections to this that I've heard, and I'm going to try to articulate their objections, and I welcome the calls to articulate it, and maybe we'll even have a debate in the near future on this issue. But the objections that I constantly hear about this are, number one, if you give parents the choice of whether or not to participate in this, and to participate in this, if you let my neighbor choose to participate, if you don't let me decide for them, and you actually let them decide for themselves, and they participate, then they might be regulated by the government somehow, if they're a homeschooler or a private school. That's the number one concern that I hear about school choice. Or that somehow, if you let my neighbor participate in the program, government will not only regulate them, government will regulate me. So, as I said, any school choice program so far passed in the country, and the one that I support in Texas, would not allow for that, does not allow for any regulation of you as a parent if you are not choosing to participate in the program. For sure, absolutely no regulation of you, and does not allow for additional regulation on the homeschooler that does take the money, or the private school that does take the money. Now, could it potentially lead to regulation? Yes, and already there could be new regulation on parents that homeschool or private school. So having a school choice program doesn't increase the likelihood of regulation. That regulation could happen now. What it does do is create a larger pool of people that don't want regulation, which means you have less likelihood of regulation in the future. The more people that are able to access the funds to homeschool and private school, the more people that are able to choose homeschooling and private schooling, the larger the number of people homeschooling and private schooling, meaning the larger the number of people that will fight against regulation and prevent that regulation on homeschoolers and private schools. Okay, so that's the number one reason people oppose. I don't think it holds water, and it definitely doesn't hold water with regard to don't take the money. If you're afraid of that, don't take the money. But like we said in principle number one, who decides? The parent should decide. That means you should not be deciding for other parents. You can decide for you. Don't take the money. If the other parent wants to take the money, let them. That's their choice. Okay, so that's the number one objection. We'll get back after the break and talk about some of the other ones and why this is going to pass in Texas and why that's going to lead to a revolution of education around the country. Stay with us, folks. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying with me. This is Rick Green. You're listening to At the Core with Marco Wildman and Rick Green. We're talking about school choice today and just laying out the arguments for and trying to respond to some of the arguments against. I'm going to take some calls, see if we can get some of those arguments articulated. But as I mentioned before the break, first of all, remember the principles that are driving our thinking on this decision, or at least mine, and you may disagree with these principles, but number one principle is that parents know best, fathers know best was right all along.
Some people think that the only way they can move up is by pushing others down. Dr. Tony Evans says that's practically standard procedure in today's culture. But Christians have a higher calling, and we'll learn more about it today as we spend 2 minutes with Tony.
Now, if you've ever seen crabs being steamed, you will notice something. That when the water begins to get hot, they try to escape. But inevitably, as one crab seeks to climb out of the pot, another crab will grab it, pull it down, try to step or climb on top of that crab to get to the top because it wants out of the pot and out of the heat. And instead of working together to hook claws together to help each other out the pot, they all boil. Paul was concerned about this crab mentality in the church at Galatia. He was concerned about Christians devouring one another. He says in Galatians 5, verse 13, "For you are called to freedom, only do not use your freedom for the flesh, but through love serve one another." Instead of enabling, serving, They were pulling each other down like the crabs, and this problem we see all around us. And while that may be true in the world, it was not to be normative among the people of God, because God wants us all out of the pot. He wants us all to experience biblical freedom, that is, release from illegitimate bondage, so that we can maximize our spiritual calling and spiritual potential.
Only a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ can break that bondage and give us a new life. To learn more, visit TonyEvans.org and click on the link that says Jesus. You'll find all the information you need. Then join us next time for 2 Minutes with Tony.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
The future of TikTok is uncertain. ByteDance was given a 75-day extension to sell TikTok to a non-Chinese owner. But Melissa Henson of Parents Television and Media Council believes parents should pay attention right now to the dangers on the platform. She explains that social media platforms aren't innocent. The reality is that predators target children online to sexually exploit or extort them. Social platforms have harmed teens' mental health and exposed teens to sexual harassment. Children and teens have been targeted by powerful algorithms with eating disorder and other harmful content. Parents should be aware that their children are being targeted by a powerful algorithm that is designed to keep them hooked on the platforms. This isn't mere speculation. There are internal memos and documents that reveal the goal of attracting and keeping young children on the platform. Children are falling into patterns of addiction, depression, and sexual exploitation. That is why 14 state attorneys general have filed lawsuits against TikTok. You might want to read the article by Melissa Henson, or even follow the link to the lawsuits that have been filed to see how graphic and deviant some of the content is on this social media platform. At this point, you might be tempted to argue that TikTok has some redeeming value. If it were merely junk, it probably wouldn't exist. My adult daughters sometimes find a good TikTok video and forward it to me, but that shouldn't negate all the negative influences found on the social media platform. TikTok is a mixture of good and bad, or light and darkness. Parents and grandparents need to be aware of the dangers of this social media platform. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free booklet on a biblical view of intelligent design, go to viewpoints.info/intelligent design. Viewpoints.info/intelligent design.
Hey, friends of 8 Days of Hope. This is Hannah Fletcher, your communications director. I wanted to say thank you so much for listening to Hope Reigns, a broadcast of 8 Days of Hope. Since 2005, we have existed to love and serve those in need in the face of natural and human disasters. We accomplish this mission through our rebuilding, rapid response, safe house, and mass feeding ministries. It's such a privilege to hear how God moves each and every week through our volunteers and leaders as they strive to provide both physical and spiritual healing to the brokenhearted. Today, we are grateful to have mobilized almost 60,000 volunteers from across the United States to love and serve over 10,000 families, to provide 45,000 meals, and to build 15 homes of refuge and freedom for survivors of trafficking. How great is our God? We thank you so much for your continued support of this ministry and the work that God calls us to. To learn more and get involved with our efforts, visit 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
All right, folks, sorry about that. Technical difficulties down here in Fredericksburg, Texas. I apologize. You know, maybe it's the opponents of school choice. Maybe they snuck into my studio and sabotaged my equipment. I'm kidding. You know, sometimes that's the way we think. Anyway, all right, so I don't even know where I was. What was I talking about? I guess I was on the essentially the reason school choice is so important. I was running back through the principles real quick. You know, who decides? The parents should decide, not the bureaucrats, not the, you know, politicians, and not the neighbor. And competition always improves. Nature of man is always going to be involved. And you got to have a solution other than this if you don't think this will work. Okay, so I think this is such a game changer, because it breaks the back of the teacher unions that have forced in the Marxism into the classroom. So the reason this issue is so big, education determines everything. Everything else is going to be downstream from that. So people attribute to Lincoln this quote, but we don't know that it was him because we can't document it, but it's just a great quote. The philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So it, whatever you're teaching in the classroom, in other words, whatever the kids are learning in a culture in the classroom, that is what the government's going to look like 25 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now. So what we teach is absolutely essential in the classroom for determining what the world's going to look like. Why do you think we went socialist in this country? Why do you think a Biden administration could be a totalitarian state? Because the education system taught that that was okay. The education system tore down capitalism, tore down freedom of the individual to choose. The education system destroyed all the principles of liberty in the minds of the children. And so that's why you ended up with these multiple generations now of people that aren't patriotic, that hate America, that hate freedom, that hate the Constitution, that hate all of these things that we love. The reason we ended up there is because of the education system. So if we want to reverse that, we have to reverse what the education system is teaching. We have to go back to teaching the principles of liberty. And if we teach the principles of liberty, then we will get a generation that next generation votes for people that are for the principles of liberty, that puts people in office that govern with the principles of liberty. But you got to win this battle in the classroom. And because the hundreds of billions of dollars being spent on education are controlled by the Marxist, you're going to get Marxist children out of that. Or at least they don't understand that they're Marxist. They wouldn't call themselves Marxist, but they're for Marxist policies. What school choice does is it redirects those dollars. It creates a world of competition so that those dollars get spent by the parents who will choose options other than Marxism. And will then force the public schools to say, Marxism isn't popular anymore. Teaching our children to hate each other is not popular among the parents. We have to stop doing that. But in order to make that happen, you have to break the backs of the monopoly. You have to break the chains that are controlling all of those hundreds of billions of dollars. And so competition allows you to at least take some of that money and go spend it where, you know, you have a private school that's actually teaching the values of free enterprise and limited government and all of these other things. It allows you to actually have some of those kids be able to take that money and homeschool and choose a homeschool curriculum that is going to teach those values. So this competition is essential to improving education for this generation, the next generation, and then that will improve government in the next generation. That's why this is such a big deal. Will it be perfect? No. Will it be a panacea? Will it be a silver bullet that solves all problems? No. But it absolutely improves the situation. It's a step in the right direction, and it begins to allow us to take back the education of the children in this country and give it to the parents and let the parents decide what the best education is for their child. And that competition, will they all make the right choice? No. Will some of those parents, choose to educate their children in a Marxist school? Yep, there will be some that do that. But overall, competition is better than a monopolistic system where right now, the only people that have a choice, I hear people say all the time, Rick, we already have school choice. No, we don't. Well, we do for some. We have school choice only for those who can afford to both pay for public school and pay for private school or homeschooling. Only those people get a choice right now. What we're saying is that most people, that's not a choice. Most people can't afford to do that. Let's give them the choice as well. That will create more competition. All right, let's go to the phones. I'm sorry for taking so long. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. We don't have a lot of time left, but we're going to give it a shot. Bobby was up first. Bobby calling from Maine. Go ahead, Bobby. Can you hear me? You know what? I can't hear you. There we go. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Rick. Okay. So, yes, private school. Absolutely. That's right first. Teaching family teaching children the knowledge and educate them with God. You got to do that. And one other thing. Put a Christian school on every corner in this country. How about that? Put a Christian school on every corner and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm for having a Christian school on every corner. Absolutely. I'm for having, five different options in every neighborhood. Right. And also that gets down to the smaller schools, allows for those schools to get smaller as well, which generally will provide for a better education. No doubt that we know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so the more that you have schools that are still teaching the fear of the Lord, that still have a values based education, the better the education of that community is going to be. And so that's one reason I'm so for school choice, is that it gives more children the opportunity to be in a classroom that still teaches a values-based education. You know, we went to this neutral, secular, there is no right and wrong, there are no moral absolutes education system, and that's why we're in the mess that we're in. And so the more kids you get out of that environment and into a values-based education, the better off we're going to have. Okay, let's go to Steve. Steve calling from Texas. Go ahead, Steve. You're up next, man.
All right. Hey, buddy. Appreciate you taking my call. So looks like that it's only up to maybe 100,000 students available in Texas that can take advantage of that. And it looks like they're wanting to start, they said, like low income and stuff like that. My kids are in a private Christian school. It's costing us a small fortune to send them there. It really bothers me, though, that now it looks like I'm not going to be eligible because they're going to say I make too much money based on what their standards are on it. I'm 100% pro school choice, 100%, yeah. But I don't like the way it's being laid out, because now you're just taking my money now and you're picking winners and losers. You're calling ball to strike. Yeah. And me and my wife could.
Yeah. 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 No, I hear you, Steven. I'm so sorry to cut you off. I only got about 60 seconds to answer you. So I'm going to jump in here. I should have added a fifth principle. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. In other words, when it comes to legislation, we're never going to get everything we want right off the bat. And so I would say I totally agree with you. I 100% agree with you. I think it should be universal school choice. I think it should be whatever the state is spending on education. Let parents take that money in an education savings account and choose how to spend it. Everybody, every parent, every kid, I don't care if they choose homeschooling, private school. So from a principal perspective, 100% agree with you. Whether or not we can get that passed is the next question. So we get as much as we can, and then we come back and fight for more. So agreed, it's going to be limited. I think the bill right now is $1 billion. So that's significant, right? It's going to, even if it's only 100,000 kids, let's get that right now and then come back and fight for more later on. I think it's more than that. I think it's going to be close to universal. Some states have done universal school choice. That's the direction we should go. So anyway, Steve, I agree with your objection, but I don't think you should oppose the bill if that doesn't get fixed. I think we should support whatever amount of school choice we can get. Let's trust the guys and gals in the room that are negotiating the deal to get all they can get, whoever our champions are on the issue. It's like any other issue. You got to trust the person in the room that they're getting all that we can. Let's get half the loaf today and come back and fight for the rest of the loaf tomorrow. And whoever's in the room negotiating that, get as much as they possibly can. So it's a step in the right direction. And eventually, hopefully, we'll get full-blown school choice. All right, I'm sorry I'm out of time, folks, and I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. We'll cover more maybe next Tuesday. Not an issue that's going away. So this is going to be, whatever happens in Texas, it's coming to a state near you. We must improve education. We must give parents the choice to put their kids in the school that best represents their values and that gives their kid the best education for that particular kid. And we should not tell other parents what their choice should be. Each parent should be able to choose for their child. All right, folks, thanks for listening. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound. It doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescue 200 tiny babies every day and share God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.